Jerry Pippin, and we're broadcasting from Angel Fire Resort in Angel Fire, New Mexico, in northern New Mexico. And we have Dennis Balthaser with us, and Dennis is a good friend of ours and also one of the top researchers in the country, and no stranger to us at all. And Dennis, you're emceeing here.
I am. I have a new job this year, Jerry.
Now, this is not really a new job for you. You've done it at Aztec.
Well, you're letting the secret out now.
Yeah.
I did do one up at Aztec, and I think Janet Saylor, who's in charge of this one, had seen that and asked me if I'd be MC, and of course I was honored. And it's a lot harder than doing a lecture, because if you do a presentation, a lecture, you do a one-shot thing, and then you get to visit with the crowd and things like that. Being MC, I had to contact all the speakers and get bios from them, had to work up introductions. And then Janet gave me about 2 pages of announcements of different events that are taking place this weekend. So it's a lot of work to be MC, and I get to be the bad guy because I try to keep everybody on schedule. One thing we did change this year was to put a 30-minute break between the presenters. And by doing that, it gives
a little leeway, right?
Yeah, it gives the audience time to go to the restroom or get a drink, stretch, and also gives our computer guy time to set up the next presentation.
Yeah, a lot of people don't think about that, but there's a lot of technical problems that go into these. Most of these people use PowerPoint now.
Yeah, which helps a lot if everything's working. If, you know, computers are kind of like lawnmowers. When they work, they're great, and when they don't, they're not any fun. But, yeah, it's worked pretty well.
Now exactly what is catching your fancy these days as far as the UFO genre, or are you off into something else?
I just finished a book by a guy who has a new theory on how the pyramids were built, which is one of my areas of research, and it's something I had never thought about, and he claims that he has done some research and believes that the Great Pyramid was built with the use of water, meaning that they
built
a canal from the Nile River over to the location with a series of locks where they could raise the boats up with the rocks on them, similar to what they did when they built the Erie Canal. And the Erie Canal actually raised elevation higher than this would have required. And then when they got to the location, they put the first layer of stone down, sealed it, and filled it up with water. And then they were able, using locks again, to raise the rocks up to the next level, float them into place, and keep on going and build it up that way. He believes that it could have been built in about 10 years. Now, the theory about building it with a long ramp, I'm going to do some calculations on that, because that has never applied, I don't think. The reason I say that is in order to get 400 feet high, using an angle of even 20 degrees, which would be fairly steep, that ramp would have to be humongous and probably would have more material in it than the pyramid itself. And to drag those 70-ton stones up a ramp that long, I don't see it.
But the water flotation part, you think is possible?
It's another theory that we're going to have to look at and give some possibility until it's disproven. But for the time being, I'm not going to rule it out. I think it's a possibility that with the more research, it could be a possibility.
Well, that's one of the important things about doing research, I think, is not to rule anything out.
Oh, you can't, because you...
as soon as you dismiss something, that's what shows up.
You get one answer, that creates 3 new questions.
So what interested you in the pyramids to begin with? Are you a believer that maybe these Egyptians were from someplace else?
Well, I never have believed that the 3 pyramids of Giza, and only those 3, and the Sphinx were built by the Egyptians, because I think there's enough documented proof that the pyramids of Giza and the Sphinx are much older than the Egyptian civilization. One of the researchers on the advisory board of the Great Pyramids that I belong to, he believes that they may be 10, 15,000 years or more old, which, of course, would predate the Egyptian civilization. He has found a civilization in North Africa about 10,000 years ago known as Khemitians, K-H-E-M-I-T-I-A-N, who were a black civilization and supposedly had contact with star people. So here we get the connection. If this contact with star people, perhaps the technology that built the pyramids could have come from there. And I'm not saying that ETs build the pyramids by any stretch of the imagination, but I will look at the possibility that the technology to build them could have come from there.
Well, you know, when you don't have any other practical explanation and you look at some of the things were around in those times, it's not that far out to reach a conclusion that maybe there was some intervention here.
And you look at the Sphinx, it has water deterioration on the back of it. The Sphinx, of course, was covered with sand up to the neck until the 1800s. They didn't even know there was a body on it. So once they uncovered it, then they discovered all this deterioration on the back from water. And there hasn't been that amount of water in that part of the world for 10 or 15,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
Here again, we're predating the Egyptian civilization. Today, the Egyptologists, in particular Hawass, who you see on television all the time, who's the head of antiquities, and I think probably on the payroll of the tourism industry, he's not letting us really do research. And I think tourism is so big in Egypt that they're not possibly going to want to let any information out that would contradict that it was by Egypt.
And that hasn't changed. I think 10 years ago we did a show talking about that.
I've just recently heard that they're now charging somewhere like $5,000 or $10,000 to go inside the Great Pyramid or to get up close to the Sphinx. They're using it for profit. You know, research is, I guess, taking a second seat, but that's unfortunate.
Indeed it is. There, you know, there's all kinds of people out there talking about, hey, well, there's something that looks like a Sphinx on Mars, you know.
Yeah. Again, that's speculation until we get documentation and some kind of validation.
I know you're a realistic person, so. Well, I've talked about that. So
I have to be, Jerry. My background is civil engineering, and I made the mistake of using a quote on my website and stuff, always telling the truth means never having to remember anything.
Yeah.
So I try to live up to that, and that has served me pretty well over the years.
Well, you have a fine reputation, and we always have big audiences for your shows, that's for sure. And you'll be taking part in another show we're doing here about underground bases in Dulce.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
And, things basically are changing all the time, but some of these things are... They've been around fairly consistent. I'm talking about UFO and underground base rumors and stuff like that.
Yeah, well,
you
take Roswell, it's, what, 64 years now that Roswell happened. Aztec here in New Mexico is 63 years.
Mm-hmm.
Dulce has been around for 20 or 30 years. So there's a lot of these incidents that just won't go away, and I think the reason is that we've never been told the truth. And until we're told the truth, we're going to keep looking at it. There are a few researchers left that really do some digging and do some serious research, and we have to appreciate that. One of the speakers here at Angel Fire this year is John Greenewald, Jr., who has that website, The Black Vault.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so proud of him because of his young age, and I wish that more young people would get involved in this business. Stanton Friedman, I guess I can tell his age, he's 76. I'm going to be 69. You know, we're getting old.
I'm in the middle.
Yeah, you're caught.
I'm closer to Dennis than Stanton.
So I'm hopeful that some young people will step forward and start doing some of this research, you know, and don't just accept what the government tells you.
Now, we have a worldwide audience, and I get the impression that in Europe and maybe other countries, ufology's interested younger demographics. I don't know why it's older here.
I think that's true.
I don't quite understand. Maybe I'm not being fair, because in the United States, our UFO shows and everybody else's UFO shows and science fiction movies, they're always big box office draws.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, these young people are interested. There's just not a lot of major researchers like John Greenwald.
Right. If you look at surveys that have been taken over the years, you know, 60 to 70% of the American people think that UFOs are real. even higher percentage think that the government's covering it up. Those are higher percentages than politicians get elected by. And our government, our politicians need to pay attention to the American people, not only on this, but on a lot of other subjects too.
Oh, I agree with you completely. And I think they would be, you know, they run from UFOs. You know, like it's gonna. Somebody's got a 45 and pointing at them.
I can give you a good example, and with the media, I believe with the media, it comes down basically to ratings and profit.
Well,
it's not necessarily factual information. And a good example was several years ago, Stanton Friedman and I and several other researchers were involved with a National Geographic special. And I filmed with them for about 6 hours in the Roswell area, used my vehicle to go all over southeast New Mexico. Never got a thank you, never got reimbursement of any kind, not expecting it. And when the show aired, the last thing the announcer said was that Roswell was a myth. Well, Stan and I were both upset because we had given our years of research to them for free. And some editor back in L.A. or New York decided, well, this is the way we're going to end the show. It is nothing but a myth. So I'm leery about doing TV documentaries many times because I don't know what the end product's going to be. Radio I love because I can sit here with you. We can look at each other eye to eye. You're not going to edit this. You know, you may do a little work on it, but you're not going to take my answer and put another question.
Right.
And that's upsetting to me as a researcher.
Well, of course it would be, especially when you, you know, you give them information you've worked hard, blood, sweat, and tears to get, and they dismiss it or change the inference.
Yeah, unfortunately, for young people listening, I wouldn't recommend this if you're looking to make a lot of money. This is not the type of work to do that. But there is a tremendous amount of satisfaction in getting the truth. The few times that we were able to pull information out that is factual and that we can take to the bank, That's good information to have.
So what is your overall impression about UFOs in general? From you were obviously taken with wanting to find out the facts. You moved to Roswell
right
when you retired from the Texas
Highway Department.
What do you think's going on? Do you think it's extraterrestrial? Do you think it's all of the above, all these theories? I mean, there's lots of way-out theories here.
Oh, yeah, and most of them are wrong. But I believe the existence of UFOs has gone on for a long time, much longer than just Roswell. I think perhaps even for thousands of years.
They go back to probably what you're talking about at the pyramids, I think.
Well, there's tapestries and there's artwork from the 14th, 15th century that have UFOs in them. So, you know, it's not something new. Many times I'm asked, well, why don't they contact us? My simple answer is, why would they want to? We have nothing to offer. You know, we're trying to destroy the planet as fast as we can. We can't get along with each other. War seems to be the new game in town. We can't get along because of race, religion, color of skin, boundaries, things like that. So I don't see where we have anything to offer. And if they can come here from wherever they're from, and I'm using the word if, then they have technology and knowledge that we can't even comprehend. They may be, but look at the advancement we've had in the last 50 years, technologically. If we've done that in 50 years, let's assume that they're 1,000 or 10,000 years smarter than we are. We can't even imagine what they might be able to do or where they could go or how they could go. So it's a whole new ball game for us.
And there's something about the human mind that we think we're the center of the universe.
No, we're not.
We haven't grown very much, really.
I'm going to quote Stanton Friedman on this because intelligence-wise, he says we're trying to get into the preschool of the universe. and I believe that. We're not as smart as we think we are, or we like to pretend that we are. We're just not.
So you basically, are you going to write another book or anything?
I haven't written. Well, I've got a booklet, but
Well, you haven't put it out, I don't think. Have you?
Yeah, I've got it out. Searching for the Truth. It's a combination of some of the better editorials I've written.
Oh, okay.
And
I know what you're talking about now.
My wife and my webmaster have been after me for years to write a book, and I just haven't done it.
Well, it's not really easy.
No, that's what I understand. and there again, there's not a whole lot of profit in that either, but I may do that before I decide to hang it all up.
Let's get back to Roswell for a little bit. Why do you think the government is still refusing to admit something happened?
Well,
I mean, I think something happened, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Well, we know something happened. Yeah, definitely. But
and I think it was probably extraterrestrial.
My theory on Roswell, and this is strictly my theory, but my theory is that whatever was recovered 64 years ago, and it was all debris, some bodies supposedly, I don't think our government or our military to this day, 64 years later, knows what they have. They had pieces of debris. So until they know what the propulsion system, the guidance system, what their motive was, where they were from, things like that, I don't think they're going to admit it happened, because until they get the military advantage out of that information, I think they're working on it, but I really don't believe that they have uncovered yet what they're dealing with. Now, the Aztec craft would be different, because that was intact. It came down 99-foot diameter craft, 13 bodies and things like that. I'm anxious for Scott and Suzanne Ramsey to get their book out, because that's going to be a great book on Aztec, which happened 10 months after Roswell. But that craft was in...
Well, a lot of things happened within a few months or a year or 2 years. Actually, from 47 all the way up to 52, all kinds of things happened.
And I think they're still working on that. I don't think they have the information yet to know what they're dealing with. And until they do, our government is not going to admit to anything they can't control.
Well, you know, even Leslie Kane in her latest book, quoting these generals and people talking about... one of the generals says, and this is not the first time that's been in a book, high-ranking general says, well, are we going to tell the American people we can't defend our skies?
Yeah, I think one of the most credible people I know is Edgar Mitchell, the astronaut. You know, he was born in Roswell, and he was the sixth man on the moon. He was an astronaut, you know. And he has emphatically said that Roswell did happen. In fact, I talked to him personally, one-on-one, and I asked him about Roswell, and he looked right at me. He said, Dennis, it happened, but I can't tell you any details. Fine. He said it happened.
Mm-hmm.
If the sixth man on the moon tells me it happened, I'm going to buy it.
Well, we have about 5 minutes or so to go. What would, in your intros here, the 13 people, is that how many speakers we
13
have?
13, I have.
Yeah. When you were doing the homework, was there any big surprises for you when you started finding out about these people?
No, some of them are my favorite researchers.
Well, I know Stanton, and you go
Stanton
back.
Stanton and I go back 12, 13 years, worked together. John Greenewald and I go back a long way. Travis Walton is one of my heroes. I'm not into abductions real big with all the stories you hear. But the two cases that really do stick in my mind are the Betty and Barney Hill case, because I now know Catherine, the niece of Betty Hill. And I met and talked with Travis several times, and there is no doubt that Travis Walton experienced something. And to listen to his lecture and to talk to him is just fascinating. And in fact, I just bought his new book. And I want to read it. I'm anxious to read it. But those are the kind of people I really like to introduce and do a little homework on them and work up the introductions.
Any incidents recently catch your attention?
Nothing UFO-wise in the last few months. But, you know, we're always on the lookout for new witnesses for Roswell, because we're running out of time. The mortician's winning the battle. And we're hopeful that we'll still get somebody with a deathbed confession or some more people come forward.
When we, Roswell, actually, with the work that Stanton Friedman's done, Don Schmidt, several others, you, mm-hmm. I think I could go into a court of law and convince a jury of 12.
Well, but, yeah, but you'd, yeah. You'd never get in a courtroom.
Yeah.
You know, we have enough information to go to any court in the world. There's people that are accused of murder and convicted to life sentence or execution
even, mm-hmm.
based on the testimony of one witness.
And we have a lot.
We have hundreds and hundreds of witnesses, but we can't get in a courtroom.
When I just was recently out there to the Army Air Base again,
mm-hmm.
and now, of course, the famous hangar is now occupied.
Yep.
But there's something, I can still feel something there, and I guess it's because we've done so many shows about
Jerry,
it.
Jerry, I think I was the last researcher to be interviewed inside Hangar 84.
Mm-hmm.
It was by a French film crew similar to our PBS. And I was standing in the middle of that hangar with a TV camera and sound crew. The feeling was unbelievable. To know and stop and think for just a minute, you're standing at the exact spot where the debris from a craft and bodies were being stored before being shipped out in 1947.
I had the same feeling when we had a little reception out there a couple of years ago, 3 years ago.
On the 50th anniversary.
You had a meeting. I mean, when the whole thing held there?
Yeah. On the 50th anniversary, we had a dinner out there, and Whitley Stryper was the keynote speaker.
Mm-hmm.
He got up to speak, and we had one of the worst thunderstorms we've had in years. And that was the exact date 50 years prior that there was a thunderstorm on the ranch up at the Foster Ranch. That was pretty eerie, too.
Yeah, I'm sure. And we talked to, last time we were in Roswell this summer, we talked to Art McCurdy, who was the editor of the Roswell newspaper at the time. Yeah. Art's 84 or something like that. Yeah.
You know, I found the Morning Dispatch newspaper. Within the last year, I don't know if I've told you or not.
No, you haven't.
There were two newspapers. The Roswell Daily Record was an afternoon paper.
Yeah, right.
That's the one Walter Hall's article went out July 8, 1947. Mm-hmm. Well, there was a paper called the Roswell Morning Dispatch, which was the morning paper. And I figured there had to be something in that paper, and I went all over town looking in different archives and different microfilms. Finally, I went back to the Roswell Daily Record, and I got to looking through microfilm, and I found the July 9th. July 8th would have been too early.
Mm-hmm.
It was the morning edition of the afternoon story.
Right.
But the July 9th already had the cover up. And I do have that, and I pieced it together off a microfilm to make an official size. And I don't know if I can get that reproduced or not, but I'd really like to.
Yeah, it's hard to reproduce those things.
But. Yeah, to line everything up and get it working.
And what was anything in there that we haven't covered?
No, it was basically the weather balloon story that General Ramey had put up.
And it's, I know, you know, we've all covered that many times. So it's laughable, really.
Yeah, it is. I mean, the Air Force shot themselves in the foot with their latest excuse with the anthropomorphic crash test dummies because, you know, they didn't use them until 53, 6 years after the incident. The Mokel balloon story between David Rudiak and some other researchers, that's been blown out of the water. What upsets me is the debunkers and the critics never come forward with anything new. It's always that we're wrong, the series researchers are wrong, but they don't give us anything new. So they don't come to the table with anything that we can even look at. If they want to debunk it, fine, give us your information. But we don't get that.
Now, when you've been hanging around Roswell pretty much and not doing much speaking, traveling. You did go up to Pennsylvania.
I did. And surprisingly, Jerry, I've done four lectures at First Baptist Church in Roswell. They have a monthly luncheon for their seniors and bring in a speaker.
Well, you're a member of that church,
right? Yeah, I am.
Okay.
And get harassed a little bit. You know, they say, have you found the aliens? You're still chasing aliens, stuff like that. But that's okay. They respect what I do, and that's all I ask. But they normally have 20, 25 people at those luncheons. First lecture I did there, I had 82 people. It was great, you know, and I had a lot of good questions.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them were there in 47. So, you know,
really?
It was to my advantage to do it. But I'll be going to Phoenix next month on the 16th of October. I'm in Phoenix for the MUFON chapter out there, and that'll wrap up this year. I've been busy this year. And I'll get out some flyers and see if I can get some things for next year.
Well,
I really don't know how much longer I want to do this. I'm 69, will be 69, and I lose money on it every year, of course. I mean, I'm not doing it for the money, or I quit a long time ago. But
well,
I enjoy it.
I hope you hang in there.
Well, I'm on a
track. I think it keeps. I don't intend to stop, as I told you.
Yeah.
But you told me to slow down so you could catch up with
Yeah,
me.
Right. Yeah, this age thing, you know, you keep getting a year on me every year. Yeah. I never will catch you.
Yeah. Well, let's write that date down for everybody in Phoenix.
October 16th for the Phoenix MUFON. I think you can go to phoenixmufon.com, I believe.
And a lot of things happened in Phoenix besides the Phoenix Lights, but that was pretty incredible.
Yeah, a lot of documentation on that one, too. Yeah. Stephenville, Texas, you know.
Yeah.
The Chicago O'Hare Airport, you know. This stuff is odd, big, big things, and then all of a sudden we don't hear any more about it.
Right, and you can, of course, check our website. We have stories on all of those. And we have a page for Dennis Balthaser.
At truthseeker@roswell.com.
And his website is something you need to go. And he writes good editorials. He got a good one about the interpolitical, I guess, quarreling going on in Roswell.
Yeah, it's a mess.
And personally, I think it's a grab by certain people to get a hold of that lodging tax and to use it for their own purposes.
It's unfortunate. You know, Roswell could be much bigger than it really is with the UFO thing, but until they can get some minds together and work things out, it's going to continue to be a problem.
And hopefully they'll have it all together by the 65th anniversary.
Yeah, we hope so.
And perhaps we'll be able to, at that point, have somebody officially say something.
Yeah, we hope.
Okay, science fiction.
There you go. Yeah. We hope.
Thanks very much, Dennis Balthaser, for being with us. And we're broadcasting from the 2010 Paranormal Symposium and Film Festival. And he's an MC, an excellent MC, great speaker. And he'll be back with us when we talk about Dulce and a few other places.
Thank you.
I'm Jerry Pippin. Don't go away. If you are a UFO show buff, can't get enough UFO programming, we suggest you go to our UFOshowstogo.com website regularly. Bookmark us. We put all of our UFO programming there as a link. It's easy to find. Simply go to UFOshowstogo.com. It's available as a podcast, MP3, or Windows Media downloads. Either way, listen or download. We do our best to give you the latest in UFO news.